I'm Paul Irwin, and welcome to the Prose.com podcast, where we discuss everything translation and interpreting related, including how to get new clients, areas of specialization, technical skills, software localization, machine translation, diversification, and more. Prose.com, helping freelance translators and interpreters succeed. Hey there, Paul here. Welcome to episode 58 of the Prose.com Translation and Interpreting Podcast. Today, I'm interviewing Aziz Bensoltana. We're talking about business processes. It's a really, really interesting, fascinating interview, in fact. And I'm absolutely convinced that you will learn something from the way that Aziz has set up and currently manages his business. So something for everyone in this one, definitely. Don't forget to check out training.prose.com. I always like to remind you of that. We're constantly releasing new courses, new workshops. Later this month, we have Branding 101 with Delfina Morganti Hernandez. We have Book Translation with Corinne McKay. In June, we have two courses for Spanish speakers. That's a coaching course with Valeria Diament. We also have a subtitling, breaking into subtitling course, the Spanish version with Molly Urich. And at the beginning of June, we also have pricing and negotiation with Jason Willis-Lee. Not to forget either all of our self-paced courses, which are available on an ongoing basis, such as Transcreation Essentials with Nina Sattler-Hovdar, and editing and proofreading with Karen Katchik. So lots to check out over at training.prose.com. Right, now it's time for today's interview. Aziz Bensoltana is the founder and managing director of Global Citizens Limited. He has held this role since 2016. Over the past 12 years, he has worked in different roles across three continents and was part of many international events and projects, which motivated him to earn a BA in International Relations at the Open University UK and set up his translation business. Aziz is very interested in languages. He speaks Arabic, English, and French fluently, and he also has a basic grasp of Spanish, Russian, and Japanese. Aziz, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, great to have you here. Looking forward to this chat. So yeah, great to have you here. Let's start off with a little bit on your background. So how did you get started in this wonderful industry, Aziz?
To be honest, it's been languages have been an interest for me since I was a child. There is like some sort of a turning point in my childhood where we got some sort of a satellite box, and that satellite box had so many TV channels. And I remember that I was just sitting, flickering through channels and like wondering what these people are talking about. And bit by bit, yeah, I remember, yeah, you know, like the beginning of the 2000s, the world became more and more globalized. And you can see a lot of news from different countries and stuff like that. So those events had an impact on me. And I remember there was the World Cup in Japan. And then I started being interested in other countries through football. And yeah, I mean, my interest for other cultures and other languages is growing year on year, even now. So I've always been interested in languages, and I was born in Tunisia, so I didn't have the same exposure to people from other nationalities because, you know, Tunisia doesn't have a lot of metropolitan cities like London, Paris, etc. So when I was 17 years old, I went to a youth exchange camp where there were like people from, I think it was 44 different nationalities. And that was another event in my life that got me even more interested in people from different nationalities, other languages, etc. And I still keep in touch with all those people. One of them I met 2 months ago in Mexico. So, yeah. Small events that shaped my life, small things that I didn't let go. Yeah.
You just became fascinated by languages, by different cultures, and you just had that sort of interest, really.
Yeah, I'm still fascinated about it, but in a more mature way, not like the the kid who sits still sitting in front of TV going like, wow, what are all these people talking about? Because now obviously there are other impacts on the world, and when I hear other languages, I analyze things differently than when I was a child. So that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense as well. That makes sense. I can definitely relate to that, how it becomes more, perhaps a bit of a more in-depth relationship with languages over time. So brilliant. Excellent. Okay. So you've got the interest, you've got the fascination. How does that then become a career, Aziz?
I left my country when I was 20 years old. I worked in China at the beginning as a teacher. And then after that, I moved to the UK and I started working in some offices where linguistic skills are required. Obviously, the okay. main tasks yep. that I was doing were administrative tasks, but there was sometimes, demand for someone who speaks certain languages. And most of the time, I was one of those people who were called on to, to take one of those multilingual tasks. So I took a job where I was required to speak French, and then I took another job where I was required to speak Arabic. And then after that, I took another job where I was required to, every now and then, to speak French. And then I took another opportunity with another company where my linguistic skills, I believe, made a big impact to a certain extent. And every time I take on a responsibility or a job like that, I was thinking, if I can do this for other companies, then how about doing this for myself and maybe use this skill to make something bigger? Well, 2016, to be honest,
Hang on a second, Aziz. Just a quick question. How many languages do you speak then?
I would say fluently I speak Arabic, I speak French, and I think I speak some English. I also, when I was in Spain, I was actually surprised by how long I could hold a conversation in Spanish in Mexico. But the reason why is because Spanish is very close to French. So that was very useful. And, it was fun, just to speak to strangers and, just have a chat with them. So it was nice. And I've been learning Japanese for 1 year. And because I lived in China in 2010 and 2014, I kind of speak some Japanese. And also because I've been in Ukraine for a while, I understand some Russian and I can find my way around in Russian as well. So, yeah.
Wow. Impressive. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. So, yeah, sorry to interrupt. I just thought that was really interesting. So please continue with your story.
Yeah, so 2016, when I realized that I'm taking all these jobs and maybe I can make a difference in my life using these skills, I looked at my financial situation. I was like, okay, I've got nothing to lose. So I might as well just quit my job, start a company, aim high, and see where things go. To be honest, literally, I had nothing to lose because in terms of mental health, I believe that it would be more challenging to dive into an adventure like this, a journey like this. In terms of the skills I would learn, I thought that I would learn a lot of skills. And even on my CV, I was thinking in a negative way. I was, even if anything goes wrong on my CV, I would have this guy at least tried to do something. But to be honest, I had a vision and I've always had a vision in my mind that one day I would be able to make a difference in my life and other people's lives. Sometimes people see a vision and they become obsessed by that, by what they see. I saw myself sitting in an office, but at the same time, I had this other vision, which is completely different to my reality. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead with this plan and give it my all. So yeah, I set up the company in 2016. I basically just paid £12 to company's house to start the business, to incorporate the company. Yep. And then after that, I spent a while writing the business plan and everything, just trying to get things organized to a certain extent, even though I didn't have any previous experience in managing a company. So yeah, in 2017, in February, I quit my job and I was like, look, I'm going to focus on this. Bit by bit, I Brave. started meeting a lot of interesting people. I started meeting a lot of people who, you know, they taught me a lot of great things and great skills. And then after that, based on what they taught me, I started taking big projects, handling them by myself for the first 3 or 4 years. And then when the demand grew for the services I provide, I started hiring people and delegating tasks to them in order to continue providing that supply to my clients, providing that good service to my clients. And because, you know, I can only do, my capacity as a person can only take me to a certain extent. And when I realized that it would become too much for me, I started hiring more people. And I'm very lucky because my team at the moment, they are fantastic people. My project manager, Irina, Ilya, my vendor manager, Aman, our other project manager, Nikki, they're all great people. Shout out to them. So I delegated the micromanagement that I looked after for the first 4 years to them, and I moved on to macro managing the company. So anything related to strategy, decision making, budgets, policies, stuff like that, that became my responsibility, which is more time consuming, to be honest, than projects, I would say. People would probably disagree.
Okay, so that's,
yeah.
Well, this always interests me, Aziz. So that kind of transition from doing the work oneself to hiring a team. I mean, it sounds like it's something that excited you and interested you and that was part of your vision. But I mean, at the same time, to go from working, let's say, translating, mm-hmm. to running a business, I mean, they're two very different things. So how did that transition work for you? And, you know, how did you, for example, many things that go through people's minds, like they don't have the confidence to delegate, or they're concerned about the quality of work when delegated, whether that's to your own team or to external providers, that might be a concern. Another concern might be getting more clients. Another concern might be that you actually like working in languages. You've expressed that. So now you're not so much doing that. I mean, of course, you're still working in languages, but it's not quite the same. So did you go through any of those? Did any of those feelings, or did you have any of those sort of experiences or thoughts during that transition?
Yeah, I think that there are three aspects in your question. The first one is how I transitioned from being a translator to a manager. And the second one is how I delegate tasks, and then the excitement, whether it's still there or not. So that's what I understood from your question. So I'll take the first part of your question, which is how I made this switch from being a translator or a person who's excited about languages to being actually a manager. To be honest, I took a dive into the unknown because, as I told you earlier, I'm not mm-hmm. I don't have any experience in running companies before, and I've never worked continuously as a translator. So what I did is just to, before I started my business, I was looking at websites of other big translation companies. I was like, okay, this is how this is done. This is how, these are the terminologies they use. These are the services they provide. These are the prices, etc. So what I've done is that I set the list of services that I'm going to provide. I set the prices that I'm going to quote, and then a strategy on how to hire linguists. And obviously, no one is perfect, especially at the beginning. I took my baby steps, and then after that, I learned [S2] Yeah. [S1] As the days went by. Every project, I learned something. And we are still learning. I mean, people evolve, and that's what we are doing. I evolved by myself at the beginning. And then from the lessons I understood, from the lessons I learned, that's how I moved on to delegating my tasks. So while I was working on the tasks by myself, I created some sort of understanding about each scenario in the translation industry in terms of recruitment, in terms of production, in terms of invoicing, etc. So every time I learn a lesson, I basically write down the process. So when the moment came and I decided to hire people, I basically started giving out some processes. And up until 2021, this year, April 2021, we used all those processes to be ISO 9001 certified. So the past 4 years, all the lessons that I learned helped me and helped us get the ISO 9001 certification, because everything has been documented, every issue has been documented, and we always take preventive actions to prevent this from happening again in the future. So that's in terms of the shift from being a translator to a manager.
Yeah,
brilliant. Yeah, the processes, yeah, I mean, going back to the ISO 9001 certificate, which was very useful in, let's say, implementing a new culture in the company. So a lot of things are documented, a lot of processes are shared with the shared and reviewed with the team members. And even today, we had a long meeting about certain processes that we needed to improve. So, you know, improving the process and improving the documentation of the process is a continuous task that we always work on, because, you know, the more we organize the company, the easier it becomes for us to hire people in the future and give them the instructions and train them, etc. So that's something that we always focus on. The last thing is, you mentioned the excitement about the difference between working hands-on on translations and working as a manager. I don't see any difference, because I'm still supervising the projects. I'm still, you know, when I have time to get involved in the micromanagement of the projects, I do have a look, I give my opinion, I also check the quality of how the service was delivered. I see the names of the translators. So I'm happy with that as well, because
I'm still involved. You're still involved.
Yeah, I'm still involved, and I will always be involved, because you know, after all, it's my baby, and I need to look after the reputation of the of my company. So I will always be involved.
Sure.
And the excitement is actually more now, because there are more people and there are more complex and challenging operations.
Yeah. Brilliant. Excellent. Yeah, I especially like your sort of emphasis on how did you put it, on improving the processes and at the same time documenting those processes. I think that's very good.
And monitoring them as well.
Yeah. I think sometimes lots of us don't think enough about process. We don't document it correctly, and we don't monitor it very well either. So I think that's certainly worth thinking about. And even for a freelancer who's listening to this, I would encourage you to think in terms of those processes. Sometimes it's not perhaps the most exciting part of the day, but it is something that is going to help you in a business of any size, I would argue. So thanks for bringing that up, Aziz.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, well, excellent. Brilliant. What a fascinating story to get you to this point. So thank you for sharing all of that as well. Let's talk now about a few do's and don'ts, or a few things that you've learnt along the way as part of your recruitment process. So what would be some of the things that you say that you've, some of the lessons that you've learned while going through that delegation process and working with freelancers, and what can we learn from that?
I mean, when I was asked last week about the do's and don'ts, I focused more on the do's than the don'ts, because the answers I provided were basically around understanding, like when the agency and the translator, they both understand the expectations. Because when agencies and translators initiate that first contact, it's all about the mutual understanding and reaching a mutual understanding. Obviously, the agencies, when they approach linguists, they really need someone with a certain set of skills.
Sure.
While when the linguists, when they apply for a job, the motives are different. Because, you know, humans are not all the same. Some people are just applying for jobs because they need the money, and they would do anything to, you know, to make sure that they improve their financial situation. Some other people, they just want to learn the job because maybe they are new, maybe they want to improve their portfolio. Some other people are just applying for jobs because, you know, they spent a while not taking projects and they need to take projects. So one of my answers that I provided is that both the companies and the translators, they have to ask themselves and be very honest. This goes especially for the translators. If they are really able to take the project or the job opportunity, and if they really want it. Because the willingness and the ability and the desire are three different things. You might desire that thing, but maybe you're not willing to do it. I don't know, energy constraints, time constraints. The ability is your technical ability. Are you, when you see the job advert for marketing from English to Japanese, for example, as a Japanese translator, this is just an example, as a Japanese translator, do you really feel like you understand the jargon of the marketing in English or not? If you give yourself a convinced yes, yes, I desire this job, yes, I'm willing to take this job, and I'm 100% capable of doing this job, then that's a very good start. Because the rest is just about paperwork and communication. And of course, negotiation as well. So when it comes to paperwork, the first document that we look at is the CV. So the CV has to be straightforward, succinct, straight to the point. For example, if we are hiring for someone who has experience in marketing, then to make our job easier and to increase their chances of getting the position with us, then I believe that the main capacity or the specialty that they need to focus on is the specialty that we are hiring for, which is in this case marketing. So they have to be straight to the point, I would say. Be professional, because this is just an example. I remember when I started the company and I was working by myself, I was spending about 20 minutes to write an email, you know, like an approach email for translators. So I was doing my best to make sure that I've got all the details. I've got the description of the project, the rates, everything. And after spending 20 minutes, I get some replies like, yes. So that's not a very good sign for me that this person has got enough energy to write something more than the yes they sent. being professional. Being professional, given more detailed answers, not being vague, because especially not being vague helps us and helps the translator to reach an agreement. Because there are so many occasions where there were some gray areas in the communication and then that backfired, for example. So these things happen. So no one is perfect, yeah. But these are things that we appreciate when translators apply for jobs. Being cautious as well goes without saying.
Yeah, being what, sorry?
Cautious, courtesy, basically.
Being what? Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for a tailored match, both between the agency and the translator. And I think just in general, I would say that agencies as well are guilty of this, of not actually targeting their requirement enough, and translators respond in sometimes a scattergun approach, with a scattergun approach. In other words, just writing yes to 10 different adverts, hoping that one of them is going to reply or something. So that's not really a very successful approach. And I think the same for the agencies. I think agencies really need to be clear about what kind of person that they're looking for, because one thing that translators, just to put the translator's side of things for a moment, is that they hate wasting time. Well, everyone hates wasting time, right? So they apply for a job that it seems that they tick all of the boxes, and then they don't hear anything back, and then you're, as a translator, you're left wondering what happened. So I think probably in general in the industry, we do need a bit more clarity from both sides as to what's required. And as you said, you should only apply if you meet those requirements, and then hopefully we can have a better sort of matching process, right?
Just touching on this point, I mean, you mentioned that also agencies need to be clear and more direct about their, the way they approach the translators. I totally agree with you because, again, going back to the key word, which is processes evolve. And to be honest, I do admit that before, some of the job adverts that we posted lacked a lot of information, vital information. And, when we had some issues, we learned from that. And at the moment, the way we do things is that internally, we send a document internally called the vendor manager recruitment brief. And in that vendor manager recruitment brief, for every project that we receive, there are all the details that the vendor manager needs to communicate with the translators before hiring them. And, apart from making sure that all the details are mentioned in the job advert, we also automated the process in a way that if someone doesn't want the job or is not suitable for the job, then there is a scoring system, and basically automatically that person gets disqualified. So, I mean, this is what we are doing now, but who knows, maybe in the future, if anything happens and we learn another lesson, I'm sure that the process will improve even more in the future. But we are trying our best at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
To be as...
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's great to hear. That's great to hear, Aziz, because I think, it is a complicated process. And I think some agencies are a little bit guilty of just sort of posting an ad that says, we need translators, please apply. And lots of people apply. And I think the idea is to build up their database of translators in case they need one of those translators in the future. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why that happens. But it, of course, that's frustrating. That causes that frustration from the translator's point of view of, oh, I've applied, I've sent in my CV, nothing happened. But as you've pointed out, Aziz, it is a two-way street. If you're applying for Japanese to English marketing translation position, you need to show that you are capable. You need to show that you have experience in that area. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you might want to think why you are applying for it.
Exactly.
Because it might just be not in your best interest, and you can focus on other opportunities. So
exactly.
So yeah, good stuff, Aziz. Excellent. Okay, so what would be another example of something that you've seen in your experience that you think can be improved? I really like the way that you talk about process. If there's anything else you'd like to mention on that, I'd certainly be interested in hearing it, or anything else you'd...
Where do I start from? I think everything could be improved. No, literally, from anything about our company could be improved. Because, there is a certain vision that we have, is that hopefully one day all the processes will be applicable to real-life situations, and that the process that we are following would be as automated as possible. But, no one knows what's going to happen from now until that day when we will reach that vision, because by the time we will probably achieve our objective, maybe things in the industry will change. But, yeah, if you ask me about what could be improved, there's plenty of things that we could improve. From the moment we receive the requests, from the moment we negotiate with the clients, from the moment the process of negotiating with the clients about the rates, about the capacity, and then after that, understanding the project itself, and then moving on to hiring the translators, and then after that, delivering the project, the feedback, the invoicing, and everything. Every step of production could be improved. So yeah, that would be my answer.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, I love your focus on the process. Mm-hmm. I think that really is the basis for a successful business. So excellent. Let me ask you then about one specific area that's always very people are always very interested in, and that is, how do you get new clients? So you obviously went through a stage, or as a freelancer, or as a company owner, but doing a lot of the work yourself. So how did you get clients at that stage? Then presumably you now have a bigger business, you have more clients, you need to have more clients in order to support that business and to keep growing. So tell us a little bit about how you have achieved that success with clients over the years, Aziz, please.
Yeah, I mean, marketing for every company in every industry is one of the most challenging tasks. Every year, we've got one season where we focus a lot on marketing, and we select the strategy that we will pursue in order to try to get some projects. So I remember last year in 2020, we hired a B2B lead generation company. We also run SEO on a monthly basis. Apart from that, yep, we try our best to get our name out, basically.
So how did that go with the lead generation company?
I'm going to be realistic with you, and it's a lesson that we learned. I'm not going to tell you it was a huge success, okay, but the only success that we had is that we learned a lot of lessons, and the lesson that we learned is that when we hire a lead generation company, we need to ask them about their process in qualifying the leads and how they run quality assurance on the leads that they propose to us. At some point, I had to fix these mistakes. At some point, I had to go through their database and ask them, how is this person suitable to translation or our industry? So even though we gave them the profile, even though we provided them with what we need, the objectives that we want to reach, but unfortunately, given the numbers that we were that they told us about before we signed the documents, and the actual result after the end of the campaign, it was quite underwhelming. But yeah, to learn. I mean, we also.
Yeah, I love that you come on the show and talk about mistakes as well, because that's what this is all about. And as you said, learning the lessons to be able to move forward. Yeah. So good. Tell us a little bit about SEO then. Has that worked out better for you?
Yes. So also shout out to our SEO team as well, because they're doing an amazing job. So we started working on SEO on a monthly basis since September 2020. So almost 1 year, 3 months.
Yep.
We can see that there is a change. I don't know if you saw our website before, and the changes that happened in terms of content, in terms of the design, in terms of the user experience. So a lot of things have been improved.
Okay, just share the URL, Aziz, yeah, please.
Sure. So it's globalcitizenstranslation.com.
Brilliant. Globalcitizenstranslation.com. Excellent. So you've specifically added new content to the site, taking into account keywords, or how have you planned that with your SEO team?
Yeah, exactly. So when I first started working with the SEO company, they created a report and they told me this is where the website has plenty of room for improvement. To be honest, I created that website, so that's the reason why. Yeah. That's the reason why I needed a lot of improvement. So I typed the content. I basically created the whole thing, and then they said, "Okay, these sections have to be rearranged. These new sections have to be introduced." And of course, they worked a lot on keywords. Also on link building, they created a blog to increase the content. They created a page for every language that we support. So that also increased the content and increased the keywords. In terms of link building, they're also doing a great job. And hopefully the next review is going to be in June to see. But to be honest, from the moment they started, I could see that there are results, whether they are tangible or like publicly visible or not. There are so many aspects where we made a lot of improvements. So I would like to thank them.
Brilliant. Yeah, I'm a big fan of SEO and and content creation. I love the fact, for example, that once you've created a good piece of content, it can sit there and attract potential clients to your website for years to come. So I think that's really good. I also like within the languages industry that you can target those long tail keywords. That I think that's an area that a lot of people can have success with. So not just thinking in terms of that French translator, but as adding areas of specialization or areas or locations, whatever it might be, to create those long tail keywords. I think that's a big area. And yeah, I would certainly encourage people to take a look at it as you clearly have, Aziz. And I love the way that you're building your business. So we've gone from the processes, which I think is really important. And I also like the fact that you talk about what effectively is trial and error in many cases. So you say, okay, well, marketing plan. It's not that everyone has this amazing marketing plan from day one.
Exactly. I don't think anyone would get the marketing right from the first attempt. If there is anyone who gets the first attempt right, then kudos to them.
Exactly. So it's about trying something. Does it work? If it works, then you keep doing it. You might do more of it. If it doesn't work, then you're going to try something else. Yeah. So I think that's just all. And once again, that goes back to being part of the process. Mm. So brilliant.
Just going back to something you mentioned earlier about blogs and how they, they always attract visitors for a long time. One of the blogs that the SEO agency posted has been quite a big success. And every month, as you mentioned, every month it's attracting a lot of visitors. So it's called The Difference Between Language and Linguistics. So that's in the blog section.
Excellent. So yeah, I would encourage people to check out that post, check out the structure of the website and the blog as well, and see if that's something that might work for your business.
And if they have any feedback,
so brilliant stuff,
they can always send us their feedback.
Absolutely. All right. Well, brilliant, Aziz. It's been fascinating talking to you today. I think you've packed in quite a few tips and quite a few pieces of really good advice into this short session. So thank you for that. I will just leave you now with the last word. So if there's anything else you want to add, please go ahead and do that. Share your URL again as well. And it's over to you, Aziz. Thank you.
Thank you. Our website is www.globalcitizenstranslation.com. For anyone who wants, who has any projects, they can basically contact us through the Get a Quote button. And for the translators, we've got a dedicated platform called Translator Zone where they can put all their details, and we welcome translators to apply to us. We do need translators, but to be honest, our main focus at the moment is people who speak dialects and rare languages, endangered languages, because we are involved in projects that require these skills. But yeah, if anyone wants to...
Okay, any particular languages you're looking for right now?
I would say Japanese, I would say German, French, and also and especially rare dialects. We are building a database for rare dialects. So I don't know, Avar, Abkhazian, Umbundu, Kimbundu in Angola, Tamazight, Asian, Hokkien, Hakka, Maori, Tongan, Fijian, any rare languages, we really need you if you are listening.
So yeah. Okay. Excellent. Brilliant stuff, Aziz. All right, well, pleasure talking to you. Thank you for coming on and sharing your experience. I wish you much success with your business for the year ahead. And thank you so much for talking to me
today. Thanks, Paul. And thanks for inviting me. And hopefully I'll speak to you soon.
All right. Brilliant, Aziz. Take care.
Thank you. Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.